This program is brought to you by the Forbes-featured Freedom Hub Health Plan, the alternative to overpriced and restrictive insurance. The Freedom Hub Health Plan is exactly what you need. By Frequency Medicine Associates, supporting health professionals and laypersons with safe and effective advanced telemedicine-like technology that can scan and help rebalance the root causes of stress and illness. By the Planet Lockdown film, which can be seen on the Freedom Hub's Rumble channel along with many great speakers. And by The Pavilion, a 21st century community hub that brings together many of the disruptive innovations featured by the Freedom Hub, including direct pay healthcare, farm-to-table dining, TED-like Freedom Hub talks, and more. Visit your-mp.com/pavilion solution for details. Good afternoon. It is Thursday, November 10th, and this is the Freedom Hub podcast webinar. Got a good show lined up. And let me first, for those of you who are new, we have our website up on the screen. It is your marketplace for health, wealth, and freedom. You actually go to your-mp.com, and here's the homepage. Just click on home. Go down to webinars, and you will see who we have coming up this week, some intros. You can also subscribe to our Health, Biz, and Politics Wednesday show, which, as well as the Freedom Hub show today, we recommend you subscribe to both. And down at the bottom, you will see our channels, where to find the videos afterwards. Usually they're up by the weekend. BitChute, Brighteon, YouTube, if it's not controversial, and Rumble. So with that, let me turn it over to you, Charles, to introduce our guest and today's program.
That would be me, Charlie. Thanks, Jim. Not you, Charles, the guest.
Yes.
And what's exciting about today's guest is that Charles Ford is a longtime participant in our weekly events. Indeed, with Jim's predecessor, my former co-host, Jeff Cantor, who's still around, he's helping us upload the videos to our platforms. Charles was one of our first LinkedIn connections years ago, as former co-host Jeff and I got into the health sharing sales business to rescue all these independent business people priced out of Obamacare because of the outrageous premiums. And that's how we fund this weekly webinar, is through fixing the health market. And Charles was this mysterious ex-corporate honcho. And he was hilarious, just this curmudgeon skeptic who would just slam our guests and ideas every week for years. And then he disappeared, then he returned, and he's active in the chat portion, just pouring on the heat. And what's funny is some folks get turned off by that, but Jeff and I, and maybe Jim, you know, we're just entertained by it and intrigued by it. And because he has this corporate risk manager background, you can't discount what he's saying. So much of it is true. So we learn from him. And, you know, as curmudgeonly as he is, he's always coming back and adding value and testing our presuppositions. And it's just great to have had Charles on as a regular for all these years. And we're 5 years running every week. And so when friends of ours have something to say and present, we're going to book them. And, you know, I'm booked through May of next year. Folks want to come on here. And Charles is going to show his new book, Ode to the Front End, which must have something to do with his own experience from the corporate boardrooms of companies like Home Depot to the cash register. And it's certainly a big topic, his railing and ranting against the corporate stultifying atmosphere. And everyone kind of feels it. Look at the expansion and explosion of the gig worker economy as people desperately seek ways to escape the corporate smothering atmosphere, or all the press about the woke nature of corporate life and this weird acronym from the Wall Street investors, ESG, which stands for Environment, Social Justice, and Governance. Basically, it's a setup for energy restrictions around the carbon footprint, social justice, and politically correct governance. But Charles gave us the best definition of that acronym: extreme shortages guaranteed. And, you know, I think a lot of us saw friends fired over the past couple of years of the COVID hysteria for not wanting to participate in the experiment, which is exacerbating excess mortality now, all-cause mortality. So that issue is not over. And there you go. So Charles has this background with these honchos, and he doesn't like what's happening with the corporate world. And the floor is yours, Charles.
Well, thank you, Charles. And that was high praise and totally undeserved, but I appreciate it anyway. It just made my day. Listen, I want to thank everybody for being on the broadcast today, and I hope that you will walk away with some value. I'm going to give you some things that you can take with you during the course of what follows. I'm going to begin by expressing how what's happened is that basically I went from the boardroom to the cash register when I retired. And so if you were using a pair of binoculars, I was looking through it one way at the boardroom and then flipping it around and looking through the other way reverse when I went to the cash register. And to be very simplistic is that all the stupidity and greed and avarice that you see in the boardroom translates to what I saw down at the cash register level. And that was probably the thought or the genesis of what's become quite an epic odyssey for me on a personal level. The book is called Ode to the Front End. And if you go to the website, www.odetothefrontend.com, you will see a picture of the store here in Decatur, Alabama, that has only one light lit of the Home Depot sign. Now that picture was taken by me. It's actual and factual. And that situation developed and maintained itself for almost 3 weeks. Now there's
Charles, we're not seeing the screen share. You want to take a second?
Okay, I haven't gone anywhere yet. I was just doing a narrative. So just bear with me. I've got my button on the screen share. I'm going to go there in just a second. So anyway, long story short, let me just go ahead, and that's a good time to do that. Let's screen share. Yes, I want to share. And I'm going to go back to the website. There's the picture that I was referencing of the store. And I just took that picture as a joke to share with the employees.
And you press F11 real quick there, Charles.
Oh, I'm sorry. My mistake.
No problem.
Technologically impaired. Okay, there's the picture of the store. And I was just shared that with some employees for humor. Well, there was an old ditty poem that was done by Frank Hewlett, and nobody in this fund knows who he was, but he was bureau chief of AP in Manila on December 7th, 1941, when the Japanese attacked and conquered the island. And he wrote a little ditty about no mama, no papa, no Uncle Sam, and nobody gives a damn, because they didn't have any equipment, they didn't have any artillery, didn't have any supplies, or a fleet was sunk, and they were left to fend for themselves on Corregidor and Bataan. And it became the basis of the Death March of Bataan. And for some reason, that little ditty went off in my mind, and I'm coming home from work one night, and I kind of took that vibration, that little bit, and came up with a funny situation at work. And then I wrote another one, and they ended up in a four-line quatrain standpoint. And I thought they were really funny. You know, I thought, this is really great. I'm going to do about a page of these over the course of about a week, and then I'm going to share them with the employees, and we'll have a good laugh. Well, the Lord had other ideas for me at that point, being the unlikely servant that I am. One page became two pages became three pages became 50, 50 pages became 100. And we now have a 434 page book, which has been published, and you can see on the website, you click on that, where to buy. Volume one is 434 pages. I now have volumes 2, 3, 4, and 5 that I'm in the process of getting published as well. Volume one has been published in Chinese and in Spanish. As you can see, the website's going to come up with a Spanish version here shortly. That's under construction. Right now, the book is available well, you can see where to buy it from here in the website. All these places, all the normal actors, you can go buy it anywhere, and this will take you directly to the link. So I'm obviously trying to get you to buy the book. But the audio book, and you'll notice now the music has come on. Fight through that. So I'll tell you what let's do to simplify everybody's life. I'm gonna go straight to the promo video. There you go. We actually play the theme music when you go to the website. Depending on your computer, it'll come on, and you can turn your volume down if you don't want to listen to it. I just did that for an added little deal. But anyway, the audiobook will be out shortly. It was out. I reached a point where I couldn't live with the audio people that I was using, so I changed. And it's been a little delayed being put back out into the marketplace. That'll happen here shortly. Volumes 2 through 5 will be available first half of next year. And that's kind of where it sits. Personally, I had no idea that any of this would ever happen. If you told me 2 years ago that we'd be having this conversation today and look at these items, I'd have looked at you like you were crazy. I'm not the author of this book. I want everybody in this video or this webinar to understand that. I am nothing but the steward. It was written through me, not by me. Now, I've done the sweat, the blood, and the tears, and a lot of nights been exhausted in my endeavors. But that's kind of how it came to be. There's a message in here. And on the website, you can go into and find the foreword, the afterword, the samples, and have the actual document, for your taste. I would encourage you to read the afterword. It talks about markets, which is germane to what Charles was talking about on the health insurance world. The foreword kind of gives you a brief explanation of how the book came to be. So it's somewhat meaningful. And it's not easy reading. Who reads poetry in today's world? I don't. Does anybody else? Lord, no. Who writes poetry? Virtually nobody. And yet here there's this 434-page quatrain. I mean, are you serious? I mean, you got to be kidding. But it's there. And the key to the poem for the user, for the reader, is you bring what you bring to the table. And we're all different. We all have different views, different paradigms. But this poem has something in it for you based on what you bring to it. And it's one of those things that, believe it or not, the more you spend reading it and hearing it and listening to it, the more you take out of it. And it's not necessarily an easy read. I go back and I'm just at times horrified and sometimes shocked, sometimes surprised. Sometimes I just double over laughing at some of the things that have been written. So with that said, it's a very unique document, and there's 4 more just like it about to come to the marketplace. When the first volume was published, I was summarily fired, and you can go on the website and go into the, and we'll do that before we get off the website, and actually hear the phone call. I mean, it's just laughable. I mean, you just sit there and go, they don't really do this, do they? Yes, they do. And obviously, it didn't matter to me because my well-being wasn't tied to a cashier's job at Home Depot. Unfortunately, that's not the case for most people, and that's one of the abuses that this book tries to address. So with that said, let's look at the video. Thank you.
Well, we saw the video, Charles. If you want to kind of continue from there, or we can go to Q&A.
Did I? Oh, man, I messed up. Sorry about that, guys. You're off camera now, right?
No, things are you're not sharing your screen, but you can continue to talk about the book, and then we can go to Q&A.
Well, bear with me one second. I'm trying to fix my computer now. There's what I was looking for. Thank you. Okay, let's get back to the seminar. Hang on a second, guys. Sorry about this. Okay, now I'm back. And I'm going to go back and share the screen. I got a couple more things I wanted to show. I hit the wrong button. Everybody seeing it now?
Wait, F11.
Oh, I'm sorry. If you go back, I would encourage everybody to go to the website. And if you want to enter the website, just to click on that, and it takes you. Now, I'm sorry for the background. Each one of these, you can spend time in, and it's like a library, and it's got humor, it's got serious stuff.
Charles, sorry to interrupt. What you could do is stop screen share, that red button. And okay. Then start it again, and this time de-click sound.
Okay.
Try that.
All right. And then hit F11.
And then and then enter.
Okay, I can hear it. Nobody else can. That's good. So anyway, what you can do with the site, there's all kinds of information in there, humor, things about the company, unbelievable pictures. There was an EEOC claim filed by me, and you see how government works. I think everybody will enjoy that, based off the way I was treated at the company, how they do things, the dismiss, disparage, deny treatment that corporates give people down at the level of a cash register, how they're treated. And then there's just a whole, you can spend as much time in there as you want to. And I think you will be glad that you did, and you'll find it of great value. That's just a personal opinion. So I'm going to just click out of that and just at this point talk a little bit about the book. I didn't have a clue what I was writing. And when I got finished with it, I realized there was going to be something to publish. I thought, well, what do I do now? How do I publish? I mean, I didn't have a clue. And I stumbled around in the dark lab. Looking for a solution, and finally came up with a publisher. It's not easy to get a book published, and I didn't want to do self-publishing. I'm 70 years old. I don't want to have a cottage business. I wasn't interested. So I finally found a publisher, Gatekeeper Press, and went through a lot of travail with them. I was attacked by other people that tried to prevent the book from being published. And I won't get into all that. It sounds like a conspiracy, but it's not. It's just man's intolerance because this book is different. A long story short is they finally did publish the book. And then I then had to find some way to promote the book. I had not a clue. I had no idea how to build a website. So I had to go work with that. And it's been a progression, one step forward, two steps back. And it's been a labor of love, a lot of frustration, but it's been a labor of love. And during all that time, I continued to write more quatrains to fill out the other four books. Once I got the website, I then found a wonderful website administrator by the name of Gabriella Brazon out in California. And she is just a genius. And you can look at that website, and I think you have to admit that it is extraordinarily professional looking and very, very, very well presented. She did all that. I just gave her some rough ideas and she took it from there. And I would recommend her to anybody. And the material in there is worth the time it takes to go look at it. I just cannot stress that hard enough. And I don't care if you ever buy the book or not. I hope you do, because I think it's worthwhile. And I think you will get a lot out of it if you put some time into it. I like the audiobook when it's available. I think you will find that to be even better. But if you don't buy the book or get involved with it on that end, at least use the website as a resource because it has a tremendous amount of information. I'm going to periodically update the current events as to what's going on with Home Depot, the ownership, corporate world, business in general, and things of that nature. It's one of the side notes, and I'll go into this just briefly. One of the things that they have at Home Depot at the register is vacuum tube, where you take your money and you stick it in this little tube and you send it back to the back into the safe. Well, regularly and routinely, they don't have any tubes up front. The manager has to go to the back and get into the vault and send them back up. Well, they're too busy and too lazy and too lazy and too busy to bother to do it. I complained about it until I was dismissed for writing the book and publishing it. They didn't like the cover of the book for some reason. I don't know why. but after I was dismissed, they had a robbery. Three black guys came in, young kids, 18 to 20. All right, they're thugs. They were black. They were the first time thieves. They got money and they ran out of the store and took off. Well, why did they do that? What was part of the reason why? Because the money was there. You know, Willie Loman used to say, why do I rob a bank? That's where the money is. Why would you rob a Home Depot? Because they don't do their cash strips and there's a bunch of money in the cash register. So the guys did it. And the police, three squad cars from the city of Decatur, a little town of 30,000, the county mounties and the state police and its neighboring city all gave chase and ended in a wreck. Fortunately, nobody other than one of the criminals was killed. I guess that's fortunate. It was just a happenstance. It was a high-speed chase in violation of all the rules. I used to do public entity. I can tell you that for a fact. And so you ask yourself the question, why was there such a disproportionate response to a $3,000, $4,000 robbery? If it was your donut shop and somebody came in and did that to you, you get a police report. They did that. Why? Because, let's see, there's something called sales tax. Oh, yeah. And Home Depot contributes $50 million in sales to the city, and 10% of that goes to the city as sales tax. They're a cash cow. We got to protect our cash cow. I'm not making that up. That's what we've degenerated to. So there's that in the book as well. And as far as the treatment of employees, I said, you know, if you're a man and you work in that store at that level, you're an endangered species. Yeah, you can be run out of Dodge tomorrow. I mean, for nothing, for absolutely nothing. We're just doing the right thing and trying to do it the right way. That's the corporate structure, in the repressive corporate structure. And if you actually show ownership and accountability for your job and want to do a good job, well, that's going to get punished. They're going to dump more work on you until such time as you just throw your hands up and say, that's it. I either quit or I quit working. I get what's called presenteeism. That's typical. And there's always the complaint about the customers, the employees complain about the customers, management complain about the customers. Well, I took the same group of customers, had great experience with them. They were great. 99% of them were wonderful. You know, they were a lot more tolerant of the stupidity and the arrogance and the indifference of the store than I ever would have been. But they were great. So how is it possible that the same customers that everybody else was complaining about, I could go and truthfully answer and say, well, they were great. You know, I had great experience. They wanted to come back in the store. And the reason is employees treat the customers the way they're treated. Management treats the employees the way they're treated. There you go. There's your answer. It's real simple. It's not complicated. It's not nuclear science. You know, you treat somebody, you serve, management serves the employee serves the customer. When management acts as a slave master to the employees are going to be what? Indifferent to the customer. Why do they care? You know, why should they care? And that's an endemic problem in every business, but it's particularly accentuated at the Home Depot. And I'll share a couple of stories with you that are in the poem in one way or the other. When Home Depot sends out their trucks from Atlanta, we're here in Georgia, we're here in Alabama right next door. So they send a truck out and it goes to Birmingham and Huntsville and then comes to our store. Number one, no matter what the company says to the contrary, they really don't know what's on that truck. They really don't have a clue. And what gets distributed or you know, pulled out of that truck on the way up, well, it's sort of catch as we do. There is no system. Don't let anybody in that company tell you there's a system. So the truck finally gets to our store and we get whatever's left. The solution to that with management, the spreadsheet geniuses, which is what that company's run by, is that, well, if the inventory is not really there, we just charge it off. Oh, what? We had 1,100 fence posts, 1,100 fence posts that we said our this computer said were in our store. They were nowhere to be found. They charged it off. Now, 1,100 fence posts at that time was about $2 a piece. That was $2,200. I mean, it wasn't millions of dollars. But you take 2,200 and you multiply it times 2,500 stores, that gets to be a real number. There's a real discrepancy between what the machine says, what our inventory says, and what's actually in the store. And that's just one item in a store that has 50,000 plus items. So do the arithmetic. So they don't have a clue. They don't have a clue. And how bad is it? They have no idea what's in their stores. They have no idea what they're really paying for it. They have no idea why they're doing it. And there's nobody minding the store. That's Home Depot in a nutshell. It is the biggest cluster I've ever been. I mean, I used to laugh hysterically at it. We had, this is a little side story, but it's in the poem, about the Coke machines. And if you look at the Coke machines in a lot of their stores, they're sorry looking. They're dirty. They're not attractive. And you go, what's up with this? I mean, we're a company that makes $115 billion a year. You got these filthy, dirty Coke machines. I mean, you got to be kidding. And then about half the time, it won't be in Coke Center. Well, it'll be very few. Well, they got them back in the warehouse. They just didn't put them in the machines. Well, first off, you're that company. What should you do? What would be the normal, reasonable, and prudent answer to that problem? Why are you involved with the machines and the distribution of the Cokes? You know, you have a Coke distributor. Home Depot is a potential national account. So you go to the distributor and you say, okay, guys, we want state-of-the-art machines and we want you to come in and keep them nice and clean and filled up. And to show you the difference is a local distributor for Pepsi actually had a contract to go do the employee's Pepsi machine. And guess what? There was a nice, clean machine and it always had product in it. You just gotta laugh. Then they would talk about when, of course, like everybody else, I have a cell phone. Okay, I was a part-time employee working 20 hours a week. And I would work, 4 days a week, 5 days a week, just depending on how busy they were. At one point, I worked 25 straight days. Now that's insane. Okay, that's insane. I finally told the manager one day, I said, if you ever work 25 straight days, I said, you expect me to. I said, that's not reasonable. I said, I'm not doing it. And so I dialed it back. Well, I would get texts at 2 o'clock in the morning, Charles, can you come in and open the store at 7? I'm not exaggerating. This actually happened. I'd get calls. I'd be sitting there eating lunch. Can you be here immediately? We need you for the next 4 hours. And I was a part-time employee. So most of the time I agreed to do it because I always wanted to help out the supervisor and the fellow employees. Now, that was my goal. Well, I found an unsafe condition, very unsafe condition in the store one night. I told the manager about it. The store manager wasn't there, but the assistant store manager was working that shift. Nothing done. 2 hours went by. I told my boss about it. I told a couple other people. Finally, I said, okay, fine. So I contacted the cell phone number of my front-end supervisor who was not working that shift and said, do me a favor, here's a picture. Would you send this to the store manager at home, at his home, and maybe he can get something done about it? Well, she did. And I got called in and had the Star Chamber. And you can go look at some of the Star Chamber treatment that's under Star Chamber there on the website, where the manager said I was not supposed to contact any manager of that store when I wasn't at work. And I looked at him and I smiled and I said, excuse me, you send me texts at 2 o'clock in the morning. I don't believe in a one-way street. And he said, well, that's policy. And I said, well, then my policy is don't send me those texts. Don't harass me when I'm not in this building because you have a problem. And I said, and by the way, how was I supposed to get that unsafe condition? And it was life-threatening and a customer could get injured by it. And it was a serious condition. I said, what do you propose to do to solve that problem? And, he tried to dump it on me that I had violated protocol, that I was, not to do stuff like that. And I said, excuse me, The last time I looked, Home Office just had me attend a webinar where they said, see something, say something. I saw something, I said something, and now I'm getting the star chamber treatment. So that was that. And now in a more serious situation out in Garden, you've been to Home Depot, you know, they have garden and registers in the garden. Well, the way our store is configured, it was unsafe going on to the street because the driveway went to the street and everybody came wheeling in and rolled right in front of that going 40 miles an hour. And people leaving were walking across, and it was unsafe. And I said, okay, you've got three openings. You've got the wrong one open. Close that one and use the one you don't use, because that gives everybody a chance to stop. There's a stop, you know, there's enough road to stop. Simple. And risk management 101. Any loss control engineer would have said, yeah, that's exactly what they should do. Wouldn't do it. Didn't do it. I complained about it. Put in writing. Went to Home Office. The whole nine yards. Well, last July, a little old lady, 80 years old, Sunday morning, should have been at church. I wish she had been at church. She bought some flowers. And she had her little buggy, and she was walking across. And Decatur, Alabama is a very small town. And in this small town, the attitude is, if I walk out in front of you, it's your responsibility to stop. Now, it's Mayberry, man. I'm telling you, that's just the way it is. So this old lady walks out, and here's this guy, this young guy. He's in his early 30s. He's got him the big truck, the big brand new truck. And he's just bought a van full of flowers, and he's pulled out, and he's doing what? He's got his handheld device, and he's looking at that handheld device, and he's looking at what's on that handheld device, and he's wheeling out, and he turns right out, and he runs right over. All right. They call in the helicopter, takes her, they remove half her skull. She endures for about 6 weeks, and then it's dead. Would it have happened if we'd had the other? If we use common sense, I don't think so. I'm a risk manager, that's right. I can say, no, that woman probably wouldn't be dead right now. Did they care? No, they don't care. Did they change it after that? No. Did they make any changes? No. We had, I remember the glass things that they hung up in all the stores and all that. We had some out in Garden that were cracked. Maybe were broken. They had a crack in them. Finally, one night, I had complained about them being unsafe. I finally one night took a sledgehammer, put them in a buggy, smashed them, broke them broke the glass into about 100 pieces. And the guy came and said, "What are you doing?" I said, "I'm providing. I saw something and I've done something." I said, "Take this in the back and throw it in the garbage. I mean, this is what you have to do." There's pictures in there that you will find hilarious of heaters sitting on top of a plastic bucket out in the electric heater out in the garden. Well, the only problem, not only is that unsafe, but I said, if it falls over and hits somebody in the leg, which is where it would hit them, you're looking at second, third degree burns. I mean, those heating elements go up to about 700 degrees. I mean, they're very hot. Then you have the wiring outside, indoor wiring outside. Huh? And well, do you think the fire marshal is going to come in that store and do anything about it? Ooh, no. Why? Why wouldn't the fire marshal be of some interest in, of that? Well, could it possibly be because Home Depot creates 50 million sales for the city? Sales tax? Do you think maybe there's a correlation there? Yeah, I sure do. This is the world we live in. And this is I didn't really understand until I experienced it, just how bad could be. And then once a month, you have this consciousness training where you are required to embrace sodomy, basically. Well, if somebody wants to be a sodomite, that's their decision. To me, it's a sin. Now, I don't get to think less of that person. I embrace the person, not the sin. At the corporation, you embrace the sin. You embrace the sin, or you are not going to work here. Now, there's a problem with that. There's a major problem with that. Then the employees and the corporate strategy is engage in fear. Keep the employees fearful and you don't have to worry about it. And so it's like, if you have the bird in the cage and you open the cage door and the bird just sits there and stares at you and doesn't fly out, that's the way most of these employees are. And people say, well, the employee can leave. Well, the employee doesn't want to leave because they're fearful. I don't know why they are. I mean, that one is hard for me to understand, but it is somewhat environmental. And they prey on that. They prey on people. It's predatory. It's very predatory. the benefit package, Charles, is just, it's just, it's horrible. I mean, it's just absolutely horrible. Work comp in Alabama, each state has its own work comp statute. And the statute in Alabama is, and I discovered this because I complained about it, the employer is required to do a first report of injury. But should the employer fail to do so, there is no fine or penalty. Keep talking about a law without teeth. That's a law without teeth. So what was the risk management approach at Home Depot? They wouldn't report the claim. And they grudgingly would even provide medical. And they'd send them to doctors because they had the right to select the doctor who wouldn't even provide the right procedure. And what are your recourses as an employee at that point? File a lawsuit. Well, good luck with that. You're a $10 an hour employee. Yeah, you've got the money to go pay an attorney to do that. Sure you do. That's the kind of abuse that goes on. I mean, it's you know, as Gerald Celente calls it the slavetopia and the plantation. Well, to me, it's about like being a sharecropper. You know, you're not an employee, you're a sharecropper. And that's the way you're treated. And if you argue about it, or you point out the obvious, well, then you get put on the list. You're given the star chamber treatment. And then finally, the manager called me into his office one night and looked at me. And first he said, you really want to work here. And I looked at him and I said, well, that's up for you to decide. If I didn't want to work here, I wouldn't have clocked in tonight. But then I'm one of the few people that would give it right back to, you know, in that situation, because I didn't care. I had the key in the back pocket. I didn't need the money. They didn't want me to work there. I was perfectly happy to leave. So it went from there. Well, then he started talking about my business practices. Well, as a cashier in Home Depot, and everybody needs to know this, you have the right to up to $50 per transaction. You have the right to say, okay, I'm going to give you a reduction up to $50. Now, it can't be more than the amount of the transaction, but if the transaction's 150 and I do it for 110 because I like the customer, because I want to do something for the customer, I want them to come back, or I know they've been in there, and I'm you know, for whatever my discretionary reasons, that was the $50 that I owned. Every other cashier was afraid to ever use it. I used it like a son of a gun. I didn't use full 50. I'd use 10. If somebody gave me paid cash, I would round it up and save them 7 cents, so they got a dollar instead of 93 cents back, stuff like that. Well, customers love that. And if it was a husband and a wife, they were standing there looking at me, you know, bringing it up, and they was paying cash, I would look at, and I'd give him the, if it was 2 cents, I'd give him the 2 cents, a dollar. And I'd look at the husband and smile, and I'd say, you know what, despite what she thinks, you are worth 2 cents. And they both would break up laughing. Now, what'd that do for the company? You think those people didn't walk out of there, couldn't wait to come back? Sure. So I do stuff like that. So he started in on that one night, and I said, well, excuse me, that's my authority. Am I not supposed to use my authority? And he said, well, you know, then he said something, and I almost got up and hit him, almost knocked him in the middle of the next week. He got up and said, well, do you wait on your family and friends? Basically implying, well, do you give them the credit so they can steal from the store? And I said, yeah. And my response was very, very terse. I said, you watch who you're calling a thief. I said, you better watch that. I won't tolerate that. That's the kind of relationship I had with the store manager. And this is an employee who got all kinds of awards that are up there on the website, and also was very well thought of by the employees and loved by the customers. In fact, the last year I was there, people are people. They bring it in with them. And sometimes it's rough and it's tough and it's not pleasant. And sometimes you can't fix it. And I used to tell the cashiers, because most of them are young kids, I said, look, when you get one like that, here's what you do. What do you do? And they'd look at me and say, what? I said, get them out the door. That's what you do. You do whatever you got to do, get them out the door, okay? The sooner the better, because if you do anything, you're just going to throw a log on their fire, and just get them checked out, give them a discount, do whatever you got to do, just push them out the door, and don't worry about it. Remember the other 50 that were nice. Now, they just didn't have the maturity to do that. They didn't have the conscience of a cat burglar and move on to the next one like I do. But, you know, that's what I would tell them. Well, the employees got to where they'd bring me the bad customer, the ones that were just out of control, short of, you know, hitting somebody and having to call the police. And there was a big black guy, and he wore a Darth Vader mask during the red virus, and they brought him to me. And this guy was spending $1,500 a month in the store. He was a fairly significant customer. Very smart guy, very, you know, well-educated. He was just steams coming out. And so, you know, I'm checking him out. He's just dog cussing, not using bad language, but he's dog cussing the store, the company, the employees and everything in between. And we finally found something to hit on. And then we had another conversation. Then we had another conversation. And then and by then, all the employees that were involved in this altercation and my manager and the assistant store manager were standing watching and observing. And finally, the two of us started laughing at each other. And I got him out the door. And then the store manager said, "I can't believe what you just did." And I said, "Well, I just treated him like a human being. It's not complicated." I said, "You know, treat him like a human being. You know, you might try that with the employees occasionally." But so when the book came out, they tried to gin up a bunch of stuff about how I had violated HIPAA. I had done this and done that. And I just laughed. And you can there's two phone calls on the website in one of the buttons that you can go listen to. And I, you know, spend 10 minutes and do it. You'll have a good laugh. But my point is that, you know, they talk about a HIPAA violation. Wait a minute. How can I be violating HIPAA unless you first violated it? And that's when that charge kind of went away. Like, you know, I don't have access to anybody's medical records. I'm a cashier. All I have is my pair of eyes and what I'm told. So that was kind of some of the things that went on during the course. And then occasionally, as the book was being written, I would show an employee a quatrain or two. And they say, "Am I in the book?" And they said, "Yeah, you're in the book." I said, "Really?" "Yeah, you're in the book." And so it got to be kind of, and that management didn't like that obviously either. So I knew when the book was published that I would be fired and they would jet up some nonsense to do it. And that's okay. It was time for me to move on anyway. But I have to say to everybody in this fund, it was a great 3.5 years. It really gave me knowledge, value, and experience that I can't put a dollar sign next to. And knowing these people and having them as friends in a business relationship at their level and being accepted by them at their level, I cannot tell you how great that makes me feel, how much that is a blessing to me. So anyway, with that said, we got a few minutes left. I'm going to open up. Anybody got any questions? I'll do my best to answer.
Thanks a lot, Charles. And Jim, if you want to manage the questions, folks, you know where the raise hand icon is. I got lots of questions. And I know we have limited time, but real quick, on your 3 D's, disparage, deny, and what else? What? Charles?
I can't hear it.
Charles, can you hear me now? Jim, can you hear me?
Can't hear.
Well, I got something I can share while Charles Ford is looking for the to get the sound back. Let me do a quick screen thing here. I saw this, I think just yesterday. And I think it's relevant to today's talk. This article, how business giants get lower interest rates for meeting diversity quotas. So basically, your Home Depot and these other stores, by incentivizing illegal hiring practices, going along with this new ESG program they're rolling out, they are getting better rates. And that's also pushing them, you know, all of the issues we're talking about. Anyway, it just came out. I wanted to share it with you guys.
Thought it was interesting. And the question that I was going to ask Charles, you know, hopefully he'll come back, is if he's characterizing this mistreatment of workers with those three words, disparage, deny, and something else, I wonder if he had thoughts on the conscious capitalism movement to change the corporate culture to one where, you know, workers are held in as high a regard as the shareholders or the customers. You know, that was something I was involved with John Mackey at Whole Foods informing Flow, a precursor to conscious capitalism.
I think conscious capitalism has to also be with conscious government, conscious communities, right? Everything else. And probably start with small businesses, do you think, or before it's going to roll into these, you know, the behemoths.
My internet went off momentarily and I had to dial back in. I apologize.
Well, Charles, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you loud and clear.
So Jim and I were discussing my question, and that was on your three D's, disparage, deny, and
dismiss.
Have you thought about John Mackey at Whole Foods, his movement called Conscious Capitalism, how that would improve the stultifying corporate culture around treating employees as well as you treat your shareholders?
Well, let me address that. I think he's got the right idea, but the old saying, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. And I think this is an example of that. And I want to just briefly explain why. First off, go to the website and dial up the afterword on the book. It addresses some of what you've just said. Conscious capitalism to me is a symptom of a greater disease. The problem is, if you're going to have a free market, you have to have a moral people. To have a moral people, you have to have an absolute standard. An absolute standard requires a Judeo-Christian God who is the source of the morality through his natural law. That's what's absent in the world today, in this country and in the world in general, in this country in particular, with a few exceptions. There are exceptions out there. There is the so-called remnant. So my answer is, conscious capitalism is really trying to do that in man's way, what only can be done by having the other piece in place to create a free market in capitalism. I admire the attempt, but I know it's doomed to failure because it's just absolutely not going to, you're not resting on anything. If this generation of managers are consciously capitalist or conscious capitalism, the next generation of managers are woke. What happens? Well, it goes away. I mean, look what's happening even at a so-called Christian company like Chick-fil-A. As soon as the old man died, the son took it over, and they're a whole lot different now in terms of their conscious capitalism versus what would have gone on and been allowed when the old man was there. So that's the limitation of it.
So we need to have a moral underpinning.
Exactly.
That's interesting. We've had a few guests over the years on that virtue in culture. And do you get virtue from a limited government, or do you need virtue to get to a limited government? There's been a lot of founders and great iconic people since the last 200 years who have argued that point. That's a good argument to have.
I guess my quick 10 cent response is, government grows as morality decreases. I think one is the result of the other.
Yeah.
Possibly. Linda, you have your hand up?
Yes, Charles, wonderful presentation, although very sad. I used to consider Home Depot, mainly the one at Baltimore Dundalk, one of the best stores where I can find anything to fix anything and things like this. But for the couple of few years, I could describe exactly what you said. Total disaster, total disregard of people, of formation, of anything. Everything was wrong there. And just recently, I bought one bag of river sand to make a place for my son to walk barefoot for grounding. And when I opened the bag, it was not sand, it was sand and a lot of stones. So I returned that to Home Depot and they were not accepting to return. I said, you describe that as sand and I see stones. You have to exchange or to give me another bag to be really sand. If not, I will go to a court and things like this. And then they exchange with another item. My question for you, if Home Depot knows about your book, which must be excellent, I will find to buy it and everything, do you think that they can do harm to you? Do you have measures to get protected? Please do it.
Well, there's a couple of responses. I would encourage you to go on the website and go to where it says dirty vinyl. I encourage everybody to do that. And there's a history of their slave labor and their connection with the Red Chinese. I'm talking about Home Depot. And their indifference. And there's even a correspondents in there, an English group came up and exposed Home Depot along with a bunch of others. That report's in there. Home Depot's response then going back and forth. They wanted to do it verbally. They didn't want to do anything in writing. Number two, They said they take it seriously. Well, they take it seriously when they're confronted with it. They don't take it seriously until somebody blows the whistle on it. And that's kind of the way they do things. Typical corporate response. Uh-huh. To your point about what Home Depot can do to make, well, understand this, Home Depot is a major advertiser. And if I rankle them hard enough, I'm sure Amazon will kick me out in about 2 seconds. In fact, I expect that to happen. I'm sure YouTube will do the same thing off my website at some point. At this point, they don't consider me a threat. I mean, obviously, I mean, they're a $150 billion company. They couldn't care less about Charles Ford in Decatur, Alabama. But if the book actually starts sales and they start getting the wrong kinds of calls from too many people and it starts to impact their share portfolio, then
we'll be in trouble.
I'll get the treatment. I have an insurance policy that covers that. Tell them to bring it on. You know, then if that doesn't handle it, then hey, here are the keys to my apartment. Here's the keys to my car. I'm done. I'm 70 years old. There's nothing else they can do to me. And that's kind of the reason the Lord picked me to be the steward over all this. The other thing is that we didn't even get into the Red Chinese and the slave labor and that Home Depot's indifference to all that. That is on the website in one of those. If you just look at the various buttons, it's detailed, it's fleshed out. It's really a horror story. It really is. And Home Depot's no different. I mean, I tried to go to work at Harbor Freight. I think they're a pretty good little company and they're not little anymore. And basically, it was the same ice cream, different flavors. And I'll just say it that way. And I took a hard look at Lowe's and I told them, I said, well, you know, I've written this book about Home Depot. I said, oh, no, we're glad to hire you. But they had the same, it was the same environment. And I said, you know, 3.5 years is enough. I just don't want to do that anymore. I enjoy getting out and meeting people. That was the reason for doing it. So my point is that, yeah, I've picked on Home Depot specifically because that's the store I ended up working at. But don't think any of the others are any different. You know, Walmart's even worse. The one store, one company that I think is pretty well run and treats their employees really well is Publix. I don't know whether you have Publix grocery stores where you live, but that's an employee-owned company, and they are amazing. You go into their store, it is amazing. The way their employees are, it is amazing. Well, there's ownership, there's equity. And with ownership,
what is this store? Tell the name again.
Publix, P-U-B-L-I-X. It's a grocery chain. They do a really nice job. They really are really awesome. I think that's the reason why, because the employees own the store and it shows. It shows. The biggest problem that you have from a store standpoint with employees, they don't own their outcome. You know, they don't take ownership over what they're doing. They don't have any pride in their work. Well, why should they? Look at the way they're treated. Look at the way they're beaten up, no employee has the ability to think for himself, according to the corporation. I mean,
Charles,
yes.
Spend a few minutes. Actually, we're almost out of time. Spend 1 minute on that concept. That's interesting. Employee ownership. Is there a list of companies where the maverick type of worker can go find a haven, an employee-owned company? Is that the solution?
Well, I think it's a treatment. I don't know it's a solution, but I sure do think it's a treatment. Publix is, if you go into their stores, you can almost eat off their floor. Okay. I mean, I'm serious. They're that clean. They're always, and the employees are always clean appearance. You know, they have a, regardless of who they are and, you know, what they are and what they believe and who they are, they play their roles beautifully in those stores. And I'm not saying anybody's perfect and they're not, but they really do a good job. So yes, to your point, I think employee ownership does matter. And there's a lot, and then I'll end with this. There's a couple of places where we talk about BlackRock and the interlocking board of directors. I said, if you look at BlackRock, Vanguard, and State Street, they own each other. Larry Fink, who is the domo over BlackRock, they go and own all these companies. They own good pieces of it. So who's the CEO work for? They're sitting there with 25% of the board controlled. He's going to make sure he placates them, because if he doesn't, their 25% of the votes are going to kick him out in the street. So when Larry Fink says that he goes to Washington and tells Washington what to think, and he has been quoted saying that, he's not wrong. He's absolutely right. There's your biggest problem. And see, that should be covered by the Clayton Antitrust Act, but we don't enforce laws anymore and promote markets. We can't do that. So that's another discussion for another day. But anyway, yes, I do think employee-owned companies is an option that does have a lot of practicality to it.
And last question, unless Jim, you have a question, what is a maverick to do? You know, it seems that a lot of folks are real picky on where they want to work. They want to work, but, you know, it's just such a stultifying experience in the corporate culture. We know about the gig worker explosion, digital nomads. If you have a friend who's a maverick, they have a lot to offer. You know, the one advice is start your own company, obviously, or find something that floats your boat. What is a maverick, independent-minded American to do these days?
Suffer. That's the only answer I can give you. Suffer. I don't have an answer. I mean, there. As Reagan used to say, if you create your own company and it moves, we're going to tax it until it doesn't, and then we're going to subsidize it. And unfortunately, when you have a socialist system or a communist system or a fascist system, whatever you want to call it, a failed system, that's what you have. I don't have any good outcome for that. I really don't. And I can't. There's no other country to go to. I mean, it's all the same everywhere now. So, or pretty much. So I guess my answer is, I struggled for 20, you're struggling with it, Charles. I mean, you've got the solution. Any employer in the United States of America, regardless of size, can take what you're doing, put it into their system and come up with a better outcome and dramatically reduce cost and improve the benefit offered. And the answer is, why aren't they beating a path to your door and banging your door down at midnight? Because you're different. See, I learned the hard way in the insurance world. If you're different and you're wrong, you'll be forgiven and embraced. But if you're different and you're right, you will be hated and exorcised forever. And that's true, I think, in just about every endeavor that's out there in today's world.
We have a company up here. Well, it's probably, I don't know if it's national, REI Outfitters, kind of an outdoors company. It's a co-op. They do really well. They treat people well, the employees. So that's another thing. I think that the co-op approach, which maybe it's kind of employee owned, as well as you join as a member, shoppers. So you kind of feel like you're a part of it also, like maybe a little like Costco.
I think that's a great, great comment. Thank you.
So Charles, why don't you give us your takeaway comment and how folks can reach you?
All right. Well, you can reach me at through the website, but you can also reach me at my email address is C as in Charles Ford, 1331@gmail.com. And I'm not afraid to give you my phone number. It's 678-477-2087. And I'll generally do something that you don't see in the corporate world. I'll actually answer it.
And a last takeaway thought?
The book is designed for everybody, and whatever everybody or anybody brings to the book is what they're going to find in the book and then hopefully grow from there.